Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from two technology experts. And that's not just what we call ourselves. It's what our moms tell people when the smart home is dumb. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way.
Our first topic today comes from Nick, who is watching along with us on the live stream, and asked what our first Apple products were. And I'm guessing that we're going to say first, like, personal Apple products. I guess we could say what our like first, like, family Apple products were as well. But personally, my first Apple product was the fourth generation iPod Touch with the Retina display, the cameras, the A4 chip. That thing was awesome.
That's definitely a good one. My first Apple product, I believe, was a 1 gigabyte, I think. I think it was a second gen iPod Nano. It was silver. I think it was 1 gig, because I think the colors were 2 gigs and the silver one was 1 gig, I think. But I had the silver one, and I think smaller one. So I think it was a 1 gig silver second gen iPod Nano. It had the Brick Breaker game. It had Solitaire, I believe. It had my music on it. No videos or anything like that, but it had my music on it. That was a classic. That one got me through some summers at overnight camp. I remember that. That was a good one.
I was definitely jealous of people like you then, because before I had the iPod Touch, because that was 2010, like later in 2010 that I got that, and in the years preceding that, I was so jealous of the iPod Nanos with the screens, the ones with the first it was the ones that had like the horizontal screen and then the vertical screen ones. What, I don't remember. I'm not super well versed on iPods. Did the vertical screens come out in 2007? 8?
I honestly don't remember.
I'm sure someone in the chat can illuminate us into as to when these different iPods came out. There were a lot of iPods in the 2000s, and I don't keep track of them. But I remember the vertical screen because people could watch like a movie on that little 1-inch screen.
Yeah.
Ooh, I was jealous. I was so jealous because I had like one of those very budget like MP3 players that just played whatever files were on an SD card. It was very basic. I guess it did the trick realistically, but it wasn't an iPod. You know, you got to have the iPod.
iPod's definitely a good click wheel. I remember my sister had, first of all, someone mentioned in the chat and I double checked. I did have, mine was 2 gigs. There wasn't a 1 gig. So the silver was 2 gigs and the colorful ones were 4 gigs or 8 gigs. So I had the 2 gig one. Plenty of, you know, you got to start small. You got to start somewhere. But then my sister had a later gen Nano, and that was one of the tall screen ones.
Yeah,
that you could watch movies. And you remember those? They used to have those like games. They had like 30 games or something. They were like $5 each that you could put on there. And I remember that.
Those.
They were never any good, obviously. But yeah.
What was your first like family Apple product? Not one that you used exclusively, but the first Apple product in your family.
I don't know, because my parents were just had like Windows computers and stuff, because I used like a hand-me-down Dell computer that had like Windows XP, and I installed a bunch of you know, junkware on it to,
of course,
something on it to make it look like Mac OS. And it was like this terrible hybrid of Windows XP and Leopard or something like that. But
it's funny. I did that too in like 2009 or something. I had this old Core Duo laptop that had been recycled from my dad's work. And I put this like skin to make it look like Windows 7 on Windows XP. You know, there was like all sorts of that stuff. And I'm sure it installed like 17 viruses and like all those like toolbars that it would add to Chrome. And there were like four different layers on there. It was so bad. But my family's first like actual Apple product was the PowerPC original Mac Mini in 2005. And we had it with one of those, the classic 4x3, 1024 by 768 Dell monitors. And I had everyone had the shoebox with CD games. And I would play like the CD games on that thing. That was a classic. Actually, I think I still have that somewhere. And it still has like Webkinz on it.
Oh, nice. That's a classic. Yeah, that's pretty good. Also, another topic. First of all, someone asked, do I still have the tag on my jacket?
Oh, did you finally take it? Oh, you still have it? Oh, my goodness.
I feel like I can't take it off at this point because now it's kind of a meme.
I feel like the people on the audio podcast are starting to notice this. It's really impacting the quality of the podcast, you having the tag on the jacket.
Yeah, I mean, if I move my arm the wrong way and it rubs on the desk, maybe you can hear it.
But, ooh, true.
The other topic that I feel like this wasn't in our schedule, but I feel like last week we talked about the Mac Pro being discontinued. Maybe we could mention the HomePod for a minute.
Yeah. You mean the iMac Pro, right?
Yes, the iMac. Yes, the iMac Pro from last week. And then this week is the HomePod. And then what's going to be next week, we'll have to see.
Yes, that's definitely a good point. I thought it was weird. I was confused. I think there's something that's weird about there being a HomePod mini, but no HomePod. Like the mini version of a thing that doesn't exist anymore seems weird to me.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. And it's the same thing. Like when the iMac Pro was discontinued, I was kind of surprised because I thought they were going to put a new version. I know we had the discussion that maybe you don't need an iMac Pro anymore at this point. But then like the HomePod, if they're discontinuing the HomePod, I guess that means that they don't have another one in the works right now, because it seems kind of weird to like discontinue it and then a couple months later be like, oh, we're bringing it back with a new one. I feel like they would just let this one, even if they let it sell out, you know, and then it's done. Yeah. I don't know how a formal the discontinuation was, but I don't know. I was kind of surprised by it, to be honest.
Yeah, if I had to guess, I think Apple is kind of, it seems like they're sort of trimming down some of their inventory and the stuff that they have manufacturing, like that's going through factories. And they probably thought, okay, iMac Pro realistically doesn't have a future. And that I think makes sense. HomePod is a little bit more weird. I mean, I get that it probably wasn't selling very well.
Right.
But and I also heard an interesting like a little whisper in my ear from a person who's more informed on internal Apple things than I am, that was suggesting that HomePod Max would be a product that could exist as soon as the March event, potentially.
Really?
Yeah. I'm skeptical about it in March. I think it would be weird to have HomePod Max and HomePod Mini with no HomePod like normal. But then again, as people pointed out when I tweeted about this, people said, well, there's a MacBook Pro and a MacBook Air, but no MacBook.
True.
So I guess that's fair. I feel like that's a little different though.
Yeah, I don't know. I was surprised by it. I know that they weren't selling well. I remember Apple had to, or they ended up cutting the price at some point to try and get them to sell a bit better. I don't know. I kind of thought, I mean, the HomePod Mini is fairly new, so they're investing in that space.
Yeah.
It's not like they're trying to leave like the smart speaker space, as far as I can tell. So it's a little bit unexpected. But
Especially
ahead.
Especially since the studio, or not studio, stereo pairing Like you can pair the HomePods, but it doesn't work on the HomePod minis. I think it's like, I can't remember exactly what it was. I think it's like you could pair HomePods with like a TV and have it as like a surround stereo setup, but yeah. You can't do that with the minis. So it's weird to subtract a feature like that.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. I guess, yeah, if you only had one HomePod and then you decide later you want to get another one, maybe you're going to have some trouble with that now.
Ooh, here's an interesting one. Someone said that they want a HomePod they can take with them. A home podometer, a home pedometer.
Yeah.
That would be, I feel like, what if they did like exactly the same design, but just made it have a battery inside? So it's that like shape and bulk, but it's, you're supposed to bring it around and it does step tracking as well. That would be funny.
You're talking about the regular HomePod, not the mini.
Yeah, correct.
So the full size, you just,
full size.
It's like lugging around a watermelon.
Yeah, but, well, it's more like a cantaloupe, I would say. I think they're not quite watermelon sized.
Well, actually, the outside, like the texture of a cantaloupe is similar, more similar too, right? So
you're true. That is a very good point. I almost said you're true. I don't know why. I don't know where that came from, but yeah, you're definitely right. It is. Maybe they were secretly inspired by a cantaloupe when they were designing the HomePod. I wouldn't be surprised. That sounds very Johnny Ive.
Was he there when they did the HomePod?
Oh yeah, that was like 2017, wasn't it? The HomePod. He was definitely there.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it has definitely been a couple years for the HomePod.
I just imagine Johnny Ive waking up in his bed, which of course is a perfectly square mattress with no like covers or pillows. He just sleeps perfectly centered in it. And I bet you, uh-huh. I bet you the edges of Johnny Ive's mattress are chamfered. Because apparently there was a controversy because, as we all know, Johnny Ive loves wildly impractical designs, right? The chamfered edges were unbelievably expensive to produce and they scratched ridiculously easily. And so that was one of the big things with the iPhone 6. That was like Tim Cook's triumph of supply chain. Because he was like, Johnny, stop it. We can't chamfer the edges of these things. And so the iPhone 6 was a lot cheaper to produce because it didn't have diamond cut edges for some reason. And I'm sure Johnny Ive was not happy about that. So he put the chamfered edges on his mattress instead. So I just kind of picture him like waking up in his smart home, of course, which has like one window and it's a really beautiful window. With like the, I imagine he uses, instead of polishing a window or like using Windex or something, he uses the same thing that they use to make the jet black finish on the iPhone 7. Like the bead blasting thing, and that's how he cleans his windows. And he wakes up and he sees a cantaloupe there. And he goes, what if the cantaloupe had sound? Seamless, magical sound. And that's where the HomePod came from. So that's a fun little history lesson.
I could definitely believe that. I was also going to say, you were mentioning when they did the iPhone 6 and they got rid of the chamfered edges and that brought the price down. You know, Johnny, he didn't like that. So then when the iPhone 7 came, he had to do like the space dust. That was his way of getting back at them.
They saved so much money on the 6 and 6S that he was like, you know what, Tim? You're not going to silence me. I'm buying space dust and we're going to make the most purposeless, shiny, jet black finish for a phone that after 2.5 minutes is going to look like it was hit by a train. And that's just the most Johnny Ive thing. You know, bless him. I kind of miss him sometimes. Because sometimes I feel like recent Apple designs haven't been impractical enough. I mean, where is our mouse with charging port on the bottom? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, that's a good. And for context, in case you don't know what we're talking about, it's the iPhone 7, the jet black. There is a video that Johnny Ive narrated, and they talked about how they make the the jet black finish, and there's this scene, it's like the interstellar docking scene where they have the phone going and it goes like woo, it like dips into this like white like space dust. So that's what we're
it literally we're looks about. I don't know if that was like a common thing in tech vernacular calling it space dust, but I think it should be because it's absolutely what it was. And it's like the interstellar docking scene, and it goes in and it goes over the I think the word that he used was complex geometry.
It was like
fine metallic shavings flow over the complex geometry of the enclosure, you know, that classic. Johnny, you gotta miss the guy.
He had a way with words. He sure did.
Let's move on to our first actual topic that we had planned out. And that is sort of in a similar vein, I guess, insofar as it's talking about Apple, which I guess is kind of logical for us.
Uh-huh.
Are we moving toward a dystopian reality where a few companies control our lives? And I guess my response to that is moving toward? I think we're kind of there, aren't we? I mean, you could totally live your whole life on Amazon, Apple, and Google. And Amazon. Wait, I already said Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amazon, Apple, and Google could kind of just do everything. Okay, maybe. Well, no, yeah, YouTube's part of Google. So yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because obviously we are kind of there. You know, you got Apple, you got Google, you know, love them. You got Amazon, you got a lot of these big companies that control a lot. And even the other and then Facebook, I feel like you got to mention, not that we care as much, but you know, they control Instagram, you know, they control WhatsApp. WhatsApp's
That's
pretty
true.
Big,
That's true.
You know, international, but you look at these and then even some like Snapchat's kind of its own thing, but it's still one of those big. Yeah. So there you go. So, and you know, like Snapchat, it's its own company, but it's one of those big companies as well. We are in a landscape where there are relatively few companies that dominate their marketplaces. Absolutely.
In fact I was thinking about this. Whoever asked this question must have been reading my mind, because I was thinking about this when I was hearing, it was like this past week, there were some more rumors about the Apple Car and whatnot. Mm-hmm. There was another one. It was like Apple moving into like more smart home stuff or something like that. And it does kind of make you think, like, how far away are we from the time where, like, picture a morning routine, right? You're asleep, dreaming about space dust flowing over the complex geometries. And you wake up to your HomePod waking you up. You see your Apple Watch next to you. You put on your Apple Watch and, you know, you start your morning routine. You pull your iPhone off the air power charger in this hypothetical, like, near future scenario, right? You pull your iPhone 14 off the air power. You get up, you go to the bathroom, you get dressed, you have HomePods all throughout your house playing music, and you tell Siri to like remind you to get more milk because you're out of milk or something like that. And you grab your iPad Pro, you grab your MacBook, you put it in your bag, you head out the door, your iPhone has already unlocked your Apple Car, you get in, Apple Music starts playing on the stereo, and off you go to work. That's not that crazy of a future, because most of that is already here, except for air power and the Apple Car. So I don't know. It is definitely weird, especially with Apple now doing services as well. It's like, okay, now they're not just your products. The ecosystem is becoming more of a lifestyle than an ecosystem at this point.
Yeah, definitely. What I find interesting about this topic is, so you can talk about companies, you can talk about how all these big companies dominate, you know, they dominate their sectors. But then I think it's also kind of interesting to think about, because there are like smaller alternatives, you know, for any of these products, you know, an email service, a search engine, video platform, whatever, there are smaller alternatives. And then and there's a growing movement of people that are trying to leave behind the big guys, and they're trying to go with the smaller ones, you know, the DuckDuckGo and Ecosia, if I'm pronouncing that right, for the search engine and you know, for all those other things. Vimeo. Yeah. So like how practical is it now, and how practical will it be in the future to avoid the big guys? I think is kind of the interesting question.
And it's interesting though, because I feel like, you know, if you look at the trend for the past 20 years, you could definitely make the argument that Apple is becoming more and more in control of our lives if you subscribe to the Apple lifestyle. I know plenty of people that don't even own a single Apple product, and they're completely checked out of that whole like ecosystem, lifestyle, image, whatever.
They're in However, their own ecosystem. I think,
yeah, exactly. But I think, I don't know that there's a direct parallel to the Apple ecosystem, because like, do you know of another company, like a major company, where you could have like their smart speaker with their smart assistant on your smartwatch, smartphone, laptop, and tablet, where you have all of those things? Oh, and a TV, let's say, we'll add that as well, and a desktop, where it's all the same company. I'm trying to think of another company that has all of those things.
I think Google, mostly with their Pixel phones and the Chromecast and Android and all their services, I think you could put Google in. It's not quite the same as Apple.
Not quite, but though, because Google doesn't make their own smartwatch. They don't have a desktop, or I would argue a real operating system. So I don't think I don't think that would really count. And also, they don't make a tablet anymore either, because the Google Slate. What was that thing? I think it was they had the tablet. It was not good. I remember that one was a funny one, because the Pixel Book Slate? I don't remember what it was called.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they still sell that. I think they kind of swept that one under the rug a little bit. But I remember they sent me an email. They were going to send it to me, and it got immediately just like trashed by reviewers. And then all of a sudden they were like, oh, we're going to send it like next week. And then eventually they were like, we're actually going to just send you a Pixel Book instead for no reason. We just kind of feel like it. And I was like, that's very telling. So yeah, I mean, I don't think there's another company that I guess you could say Samsung. Samsung makes laptops and smartphones that are good, and smartwatches. I don't know did they make any desktop computers though? And they certainly don't make their own operating system. That's another thing that we have to keep in mind. Even if you have a company that makes their own hardware, and you can have a smartphone, a smartwatch, a laptop, a tablet, a TV, a smart speaker, usually they're running some sort of licensed software, like, you know, Windows or Android. Right. I don't know that there is another company in existence, at least in the North American market, which is what we're familiar with, that has as much control as Apple does. And I have to say, I don't think it's necessarily a good thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of, but then, I mean, it's kind of the thing about these big companies. Like you can say, you know, how much of how bad it is that there are so few companies that control everything. It's kind of hard. Like if you were trying to become the next Apple, right? You can't do all of that stuff. You can't have the operating system and all the different, you know, products and all the different services. Like if you're starting a new company and you're growing up there, you know, you're probably going to be doing one of those things. You're going to have you're going to be selling laptops. You're going to be selling smartwatches or something. But you need to have such a big scale. Like Apple, you know, Apple, Google, these companies have such a huge scale to be doing all of this stuff. So it's sort of like, I guess, the barrier to entry. I guess like these companies, you know, they've been around for a long time. They were sort of there, you know, at the beginning, especially, you know, Apple has been around for a very long time. Google was around, you know, at the beginning of the internet, the early days of the internet. And they've sort of, you know, been in this wave of technology going up, but now they're kind of at the top, and they've sort of built a wall behind them that is very hard to scale.
It is a walled castle, what's the term? It's like a walled paradise,
walled garden. I think you're.
Yeah, that's the one. Of.
Yeah.
Someone actually pointed out that Microsoft used to do, like, you know, the Windows Phone, their wearables. But again, they kind of sucked. No one has a Windows phone now. Of course, now that I say that, there's going to be like an army of Windows phone people that are like, oh, we actually love our Windows phone. But like, I'm sorry, but you're not representative of the general public. I don't know anyone who has a Windows phone after like 2015. I had a friend in 2015, 16 who had a Windows phone, but it was short-lived. Mm. No one has them anymore. Zune, someone pointed out.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. And I think one of the things is, you know, if you're another company that you can't do the stuff that Apple does. Other companies do not have the capability to do, like, getting rid of the headphone jack. If you're a startup company, you can't do that. You can't force people to, like, moving to ARM. Let's say you're a startup laptop manufacturer and you say, okay, ARM is really promising. Apple's moving to ARM. We want to go there too. Well, you're out of luck, because as long as Windows or Android are locking you out of something, you just have to deal with it. So that's why Apple can move to ARM. And that's not even, you know, we're not even talking about small companies. Dell can't move to ARM. HP, Lenovo, they're stuck with Intel too, because they're hamstrung by Microsoft. Microsoft is then hamstrung by Intel and AMD and x86 manufacturers, where they would be developing for something that doesn't exist. All of those things kind of slow it down. And that's why Apple is so hard to compete with, because they just have top to bottom control of everything, and they're already in the position where they're big enough to flex that power as much as they want. And so there are benefits to that. Obviously, I'm using an M1 Mac Mini to stream this right now, and it's not even warm, unlike Noah's MacBook Pro, which is like a jet engine. Mm-hmm. But there are downsides to that too.
Yeah, it's definitely like the products that these companies are going to make are going to be, they're going to make good products, and they're going to sell them. You're going to be able to access, you know, good products, because they have a lot of money. They have big, you know, big scale. They have deals worked out with all the manufacturers. You know, they do a lot of stuff in house, whatever. You're going to get better. I want to say, I don't know if this is quite right. I'm going to say you're going to get a better deal overall. With, you know, if you go with Apple, you know, they have all these, if you're, you know, trying to build your, you know, you're a smaller company and you're trying to build a product. If you don't have Apple's scale and Apple's negotiating power, you're not going to be able to do it at the same scale and the same price range as Apple. But then on the other hand, you know, these few companies that make these great products, well, it's, you know, it gets hard to compete with them. And then you get into these, the antitrust stuff that's going on
that's
and
a mess.
All of that. Yeah.
We love corporate oligarchy. Anyway, our next, I wanted to address, we had a super chat here in the live stream. Let me see if I can pull that up to quote it directly. If not, okay.
I
yeah.
Have
so
the quote as well.
So thoughts of iPhones and smartphones being used in feature filmmaking. Is there a future for phone-based filmmaking? I think this is an interesting question, because I don't necessarily think that there's even a future. There's already a present for iPhone filmmaking. The movie Unsane, which came out in 2018, was shot on iPhones, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure. Really well. It got like an 80% Rotten Tomatoes. It did very well at the box office. I'm definitely not just like looking at the IMDb page right now. Definitely not doing that. But it did very well. And it's got household names such as Claire Foy and Jay Farrow.
Oh, yeah.
Which I just know off the top of my head.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely interesting, because that's happened. I think there's been some other movies. I know there's been short films and whatever. I think you could broaden the discussion too, and even just talk about how the phones and the technology has made filmmaking and video making like more accessible to people. Like for example, on my YouTube channel, I have my iPhone 12 Pro, and before this I had an iPhone 10, and I filmed my videos with those phones. And like, honestly, you have your phone. I do YouTube. I make a video occasionally, so I do it for fun. I'm not like Luke. I don't have
joking. The joke is that Noah uploads videos every fiscal quarter.
Yes. So I have.
Have you actually? Do you have one for this quarter? I think you missed one.
I guess yeah. Q1 2021. I don't know if I had one.
Or no, I think wouldn't it be like Q4 2020? I think is what you missed.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because the fiscal quarters are weird. I think they go into the next year. Anyway, the point is, yeah, iPhones are here. And even if they're not going to be used for, like, there's not going to be an Avengers film shot on iPhone. There's not going to be, like, big blockbuster film shot on iPhone. But the, as Noah said, accessibility is the really big thing, because it means that if you wanted to get into filmmaking, it is now so much easier. Because iPhones are actually pretty solid. I'm always consistently impressed with how good people get iPhone footage to look. Because every time I take a video with an iPhone, it looks like ass. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I mean, granted, I'm not exactly taking like cinematic videos with like stabilizers or stuff like that, but it always looks bad. And then you see this like shot on iPhone footage and it's like with a 6S and it looks amazing.
Yeah.
It's like crazy. You could shoot a multi-camera show and you could just buy three iPhone 6S's. It would cost you like $300 to have a triple camera setup. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's honestly it's really cool. Like I can make these videos. I don't have, you know, all the fancy equipment. I don't really have the desire to buy the fancy equipment because it's just not worth it for me. But like to have my phone that I use every day and to be able to get like 4K 60 FPS footage that like
HDR.
Looks, it's yeah, and it looks good. Like it looks really good. And to just have that on my phone and, you know, I just stick it in a tripod and I can film a YouTube video. It's honestly pretty cool. It's so accessible now.
Someone brought up that Modern Family shot an entire episode on the 6S. I remember that. Remember the episode? I don't know if you've watched Modern Family, no, but they did a whole episode that took place on OS X Yosemite when that came out in 2014. That was a really cool episode. Very creative.
I remember that episode. I have watched a decent amount of Modern Family. I also remember, totally random, but from that episode, because they had the episode that took place on Yosemite, and I think they said they like made that before Yosemite came out, and they had to like recreate all of the graphics and stuff. There was like,
really?
I don't remember. There was like a whole thing that it was like actually super complicated to make that, but it was, I always liked those. Like the Modern Family, there was the movie Searching. There was, I think, another movie where they like take place on a computer screen. I always find those pretty cool.
Yeah, kind of topic, I think I remember that. Yeah, I mean, well, not really, because we're talking about iPhone filmmaking, and I mean, it's a really creative, in terms of Modern Family, that's also a really smart business move, because I'm sure they got a lot of money from Apple for that integration, and product placement, when it's integrated into the plot like that, like, we're talking about it, because it was cool, it was interesting, it was an advertisement, it was a 30-minute long ad, essentially. But it was interesting and it was clever and it wasn't like overbearing. And product placement like that can be very interesting. And I'm sure that, what was the movie? I already forgot the name because I closed the IMDb page, that shot on iPhones. They like made enough of a deal about it that I'm 100% sure Apple was like, you should shoot this video on iPhones. We think that would be very good for you. It was a pretty low budget movie, so I would guess that Apple helped out with that, and I don't blame them for it. It's a pretty smart advertising move. Not that Apple really needs to advertise, let's be real.
Yeah. No, but it's definitely a testament. It's kind of cool. So I guess like there's two sides. It's very accessible to people like me and other people. But then if you want to step up and actually make, you know, like a movie or whatever, there's lots of accessories now, you know, stabilizers and lens attachments and different things. And you got Pro Raw and HDR, and you can do a lot with the editing. It's just, I don't know. It's just really impressive how much tech and how good, how much tech's in the cameras, how good the cameras are, how accessible all this is. So it's a great topic.
Yeah, definitely. And in fact, I guess kind of similar to that, one of our other topics, if you want to pull up the email from Ben, was about sort of disrupting industries with a one-person team. I don't know if you have the email up and you want to read like a little snippet of that, because I think it's a very, very related and similar topic.
Yes, I have this email up. It came from Ben Wiles. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'll try and summarize it a little bit, but basically, so Ben, who emailed us, said he works for a tire company in the UK, and he was trying to convince this company to do some in-house production. He says he's trying to do some in-house production, I guess for commercials or advertising or something along with that. And it seemed like the management was always saying no because, quote, you know, that wasn't how it's done, and they didn't do Max. You know, they have their sort of, I guess, you know, you hire a studio and they, you know, use all their fancy equipment and all their fancy editing and all that stuff. So anyways, it sounds like Ben sort of went out on his own. He got an M1 MacBook Air, a Nikon D5500, Final Cut, and a few accessories. He said he spent about 2,000 euro. And then he, I guess, sort of went out on his own to do this video production as a one-man team with this sort of, you know, accessible to consumers hardware versus the traditional sort of, I guess, hire an external, you know, studio with a bunch of people and a bunch of fancy stuff. And I guess he's doing pretty well for himself. So it's just kind of interesting. Another one of those, you know, disrupting the industry kind of stories.
Yeah. And I think it's a really absolutely valid point, because we're at a point now with technology that you can do absolutely incredible stuff on your own. I mean, look at the amount of incredibly talented YouTubers out there that have insane production quality with small teams. I mean, if you look at MKBHD, he's like, you know, the sort of the halo of tech YouTube. And realistically, I don't know exactly how many people work there, but I'm fairly certain it's less than 20. It's a very small business by traditional reference, but you can be very, very successful without having huge people and like departments and like the whole sort of bureaucratic institution of a company. And it's a very interesting question, because it kind of makes you wonder why this company was so opposed to doing that. It's a very interesting dilemma, because you'd think if someone gives you the opportunity to do something for less money, why would you not just like give it a shot if you're a traditional company? You know what I mean? What's the harm in trying?
Yeah, I guess there's kind of, you know, maybe there's the thought of like, you know, how good could, you know, one person do, you know, just with their own, you know, you got your laptop and your Final Cut. How much can one person really do? I don't know. Obviously, this is speculation, you know, as far as the reasoning for this management to not go with it. But it's definitely come a long way in terms of what people are able to do. Even like your videos, Luke, like it's just you, and I help out sometimes. But like I'm not trying to give you too much. I'm not trying to give you any more credit than you deserve. But honestly though, like, you know, you got a couple cameras, you got some microphones, you have a nice setup, you got Final Cut, you got your iMac, mm-hmm. and it's just you. And like, I don't know, like the videos look, they look very good. They look very professional. Like, and it's one person. So like, I'm just saying, like, that's, you know, that's bottom tier right there. You know, Luke Miani, bottom tier right there. But yeah, still, absolute bottom of the barrel. Even there, bottom tier right there, and still, you know, still very, I'm kidding, but still very impressive. So it just goes to, it just, you know, speaks to that, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Also, we got to acknowledge here, Cole Weathers, thank you so much for the super chat. Absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. I'm glad that you found us entertaining enough to be deserving of such generosity. So just wanted to give a shout out to Cole for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, with that, we could buy a 6S and film our own movie.
Yeah.
So there you go. We're well on our way to our own short film.
Yeah, not too bad. All right.
So our next topic that we have lined up for today. Actually, wait, before we get to that, I did want to address a question that I thought was really, really interesting. Let me see if I can find this up here.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, here it is. Okay. What is our opinion on the strict advertising rules for online personalities such as ourselves versus TV personalities that don't need to disclose most of the stuff that they would have for advertising? And I think that's an interesting topic. Now, if you guys don't know, YouTubers have pretty strict FCC guidelines for disclosing sponsored posts. And they're actually pretty recent. They only came about around 2015, 2016. And I think one of the big sort of catalysts of that was this scandal that Lord & Taylor got into. I think it was Lord & Taylor, which is kind of ironic because now they're out of business. So I guess it didn't really work too well for them. But they had this campaign. There was this new line of dresses for the spring, and they paid a whole bunch of influencers in this coordinated campaign on Instagram to post about this dress, and it was an absolutely smashing success. A ton of people bought it, but they got into trouble because they didn't tell anyone to disclose it. Now, the unfortunate side of this is I think there were influencers that got in trouble, got a lot of hate from the audience, which in my opinion, I don't think is fair because there weren't any rules saying that they didn't have to do that. And when a big company, like if you have 400,000 Instagram followers and a big company like Lord & Taylor says, take a bunch of money to put this dress on, you're not going to question it too much. And quite frankly, the onus of responsibility is on the big corporation. So needless to say, they got into a little bit of trouble. And that was part of, that was one of the reasons why a lot of these guidelines came to be. So essentially, I mean, you guys know the drill. You've seen a YouTube video. This video is sponsored by blah, 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 blah. That is legal. You have to say that. You have to disclose it in the description. And personally, I'm all for it. I'm in favor of creators monetizing their videos. I'm in favor of disclosing advertisements. So I don't have any like negative feelings towards the way that YouTubers have to conduct advertisements. I do think actually that I guess by extension, TV and movies should have a little bit more transparency. Now, sometimes you can tell, like I remember this, like season one of Designated Survivor, which was a very good show that was sponsored by Ford. And they're like going out to try to like uncover this terrorist plot. And it's like this very heady scene. And they've just found like a big clue about a bioweapon. And they go back and they get in their Ford Fusion. And there's like a 15 second prolonged sequence of like showing off the interior of the Fusion and like the eco dial in the gauge cluster. And like, and then the main character's like, oh, let me connect my Bluetooth to the center thing with the, what was that? Like that, oh, I can't remember. They had like a, it was like some Microsoft powered smart thing that they used to have in Ford's. So clunky. It just completely pulls you out of it. And because they don't have to disclose until the credits, it seems a little weird to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny because like, obviously, you know,
Ford Sync, that's what it was. Yeah, it was powered by Microsoft.
I remember that. It's kind of funny because obviously, you know, disclosing that you're being sponsored is a good thing. I feel like it's usually pretty obvious. Like the example that you just mentioned, you know, if you're seeing stuff, if you're seeing that in an episode, you could probably guess that they're sponsored. Obviously, you know, obviously the disclosure is helpful. And there are some times where like I'll see a TV episode and at the end it'll say like promotional considerations by some company. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's sort of a little like a lighter version of a sponsoring. Maybe, you know, their products just appear in the episode, but not so much of a center stage example. I don't know. I just feel like it's usually pretty obvious when something is being sponsored. I don't know.
I do think though that it gets a little bit more dubious with like childhood children's content. Cause like, mm-hmm. when you're an adult, there's a reasonable expectation of like, okay, if this person, if you know, they're coming out of a crime scene, they go, oh, my Ford Fusion gets 40 miles to the gallon. How cool is that? Anyway, let's go catch this murder guy. Like, you're like, I don't think that was just, you know, an organic line that they just felt really fit with the mood of the show. You can kind of pick up on the context clues a little bit. But if like Blue's Clues had an episode where the chair was replaced with a new like model from Raymore and Flanagan, I think it would be a little bit questionable, because the assumption that people are aware that they're being advertised to, I think, is pretty important. And you know, as we said, there are disclaimers at the end. The credits, promotional consideration provided by Dell. That's a common one. The Office had that a lot, I think, because of the monitors, the ubiquitous Dell Office monitors that were in all those episodes. And like, so you do have to have disclosures in TV and film. It's just that you can put them away at the end when no one's watching. So you can kind of get away with it. It would kind of be like if I did a video where all of a sudden I was very mysteriously in favor of a Lenovo laptop and talking about how much better it was than a MacBook. And then at the very end, at the end card on the bottom right in 12-point font, it said, sponsored by Lenovo. And then the video ended. Like, it's like, okay, you did it, I guess, but like,
Yeah, that's true. I guess that is a good point that you made about the children's content. I feel like, yeah, for children and teens, like if you're a child, you're watching the Blue's Clues and you see that Raymore and Flanagan chair and you're like, mommy, mommy, I want the Raymore and Flanagan chair. Like that's definitely that's what all the kids are looking at, is the Raymore and Flanagan chair. But
like,
to be
mommy,
honest,
we gotta go to Raymore and Flanagan so we can be like Blue's Clues.
No, to be honest though, it is kind of interesting. I know there's all those like toy channels on YouTube, and I'd be curious to know how much of that is, you know, and I don't want to start speculating about this stuff, but I would just be curious to know how much of it is sponsored and how much of it they're clear about versus not so much, because it's a really interesting point.
If I were a toy company and I were trying to get a loophole, I think you can kind of get away with, like, when a company sends you a product for review, then you don't have to disclose it because there's not an obligation there. So, like, I've had a couple of videos that I've worked on where a company has sent me something. Like, well, actually, the recent video that we did where we set up a home theater, Valencia Seating sent us the chairs. But I turned down doing a sponsored video because I wasn't interested in just making an advertisement. I wanted to just kind of do my own thing. And so that's kind of one way that you can get around that. I mean, as a company, you have to then make a good product, because, you know, I've had a couple of things, like a couple of years ago, where a company sent me a product. It wasn't good. I made a negative video and they said, hey, can you take this out? And I said, no, I can't. Sorry, too bad. Make a better product. Because that's basically all it is. And I actually wanted to address someone pointed out something interesting. Oh man, I lost it in the chat. Oh, here it is. This portion is sponsored by X Company. And Michael was wondering what that means. This is one that I've seen on YouTube, and I actually kind of like it. I think it's an interesting idea because it's really more of a technicality. It doesn't really change anything about the video, but my understanding of saying this portion is sponsored by the company would be to say that this advertisement is brought to you by the company. The rest of the video is independent journalism or whatever. It's content that is not branded. And that, I think, is a valid distinction. In case someone might be confused, I guess it would make sense more if you were doing an Intel laptop review that was sponsored by Intel. I know Linus Tech Tips has done that a couple of times, and they usually handle it in a similar way, where the advertisement messaging is distinctly different from the product review, so that you can tell when there are editorial opinions versus advertising messages. And I think that's an important distinction to have, especially if the advertising content and the video content are on a similar subject. Mm-hmm. So I think that's my understanding of those distinctions.
Yeah, definitely, definitely important. I'm glad that I guess things are moving in the direction of being clear. And I also feel like it's popping up a lot more. Like I go on Twitter sometimes, and when people have like a tweet that goes viral, they'll post like 10 links under, like, go buy this this like ceiling star projector, or buy this
that's a big one.
Jelly fish that like is angry and happy and you can flip it inside out or something. There's like, it's the same like 5 or 10 things, but I feel like now you're seeing them on Instagram, on like Twitter. Like someone writes a tweet and then you get ads on there. You get on YouTube, I feel like there's even more ads, and there's more like channels or like platforms for these ads to be, like TikTok. I don't use TikTok, but I'm assuming there's ads and sponsored stuff on there as well. So I don't know. There's just a lot of stuff. So I guess it's good that these guidelines exist now, because there's, you know, more stuff going on. The lines are getting blurred more between ads and not ads. And so guidelines like these are good to have.
Yeah, that's funny that you bring up the Twitter ads, because I always roll my eyes at those. They're not good. I'm sorry, but there's some, like, I don't know. It's a tricky line, and you know, people, you know, you got to do what you got to do. If you got that viral tweet that's popping off, and someone says, "Hey, I'll give you $500 to put a link below it," like, of course you're gonna do that. Obviously, I don't knock people for doing that. I mainly, like, whenever I see advertising content through influencers, if it's bad, I tend to blame the companies. Just as someone who's worked with companies that have at times been a little pushy and have said like, oh, you got to do this and this and this. And it's like, I don't really want to. Like, that was one of the reasons why I've never worked with Raid Shadow Legends, the bane of YouTube ads. If you're watching this video and you've watched YouTube between 2019 and now, then you've seen a Raid Shadow Legends ad. They offered me like stupid amounts of money sometimes, but like, and I'll be honest, guys, I was close. When they email you and they say, we want to give you $5,000 for one video with no view guarantee or anything.
Ooh, that's a lot.
It is really hard to say no, but then I read the copy and I'm like, I can't even picture myself saying those words. You know what I mean? Like it's just incompatible.
That's an interesting, yeah, it's like how far are you willing to, I don't want to say sell your soul, that's so dramatic, but like how far are you willing to go? $5,000, I mean, that's a lot of money to just talk about a mobile game for a minute. But I definitely agree. I personally don't do, I don't think I've never done an ad on my channel. Obviously, it's much, much smaller. I do get occasional offers. They're from smaller companies, so, you know, not the same level. But I don't know. It's just, I definitely see what you mean. Like, Raid Shadow Legends, like, I don't think that's, like, you would ever play that game. I don't think I would ever play that game. So to, like, advertise it to people, and it's something that you aren't even interested in, I don't know. I don't know if I could do it. Plenty of people are happy to do it. I'm not going to put any blame on them by no means, but I don't know if, I don't think I would do it. I understand.
I'm trying to see if I can find, I really should have saved it. The time that they offered $5,000, they had like basically a script. There was no real creative freedom for it. Mm. Oh, did I find it? No, this is not it. Dang it. It was honestly, I'll go through my email. I'll hunt it down and I'll see if I can find it somewhere in here, maybe on a future episode of the podcast, because, oh my goodness gracious. It was just unbelievable. I just couldn't imagine it.
I don't know. I added that to our list of topics. I think we could revisit that in the future. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, if I can find that, I will definitely read you guys. I don't care if Raid Shadow Legends gets mad at me for reading their like ad copy and making fun of it, because quite frankly, Raid Shadow Legends sucks big butt. I would never. If they email me after this and they're like, "Luke, you gotta stop trashing Raid Shadow Legends. You used $10,000 just to stop trashing us, I would legitimately have to think about that because I hate them so much.
You're closing some doors here. I don't know.
It's a door that I didn't want opened. I'm okay with that bridge being burned because I was feeling like an arsonist when I saw that bridge.
That's fair enough. Yeah, fair enough.
Someone brought up here, iFixit ads are the best fit. I definitely got to agree. Noah and I did a couple of like free iFixit ads back in the day when I had like 15,000 subscribers. We would be like, sponsored by iFixit? Not really, but maybe if they actually sponsored us. And then now they actually do. And it's nice. And I love iFixit. That's like, they wouldn't even have to pay me. Oh, I shouldn't say that.
That's the door you don't want to close.
No, we got to keep that door open. That's a good door.
we like iFixit though.
Thank you guys for listening. I just wanted to say, by the way, this episode of the podcast was sponsored by Raid Shadow Legends. Plot twist. It was all just a subversive trick. I've been playing mind games with you the whole time. You think about it, as we've been talking about Raid Shadow Legends, haven't you seriously just been like, oh man, now I kind of want to play it because I know I have. Download Raid Shadow Legends today. All right, guys, give me this. What is it? 12? 20 grand? 20 grand? Wait, what do I have to say? Come play with me on Raid Shadow Legends. I'll raid your Shadow Legend, but you got to try to get my Shadow Legend. I'm not going to let you. 50? Okay, cool. Yeah, so anyway, guys, that was my favorite game, Raid Shadow Legends, which is a fun and cool game that I definitely play a lot. Mm-hmm.
Now you're just giving them free advertising at this point.
I hope not. I would hope that I'm giving them, what's the opposite of advertising? Antitizing?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Maybe. I'm going to go with that.
It could be. You could make it. It could be a word.
Well, it looks like we are I don't really know what else there is to say after that whole little debacle there. This has been the fifth episode of Dark Mode. I can't believe it's been 5 episodes. Kind of crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels like, I mean, it's once a week, I guess. It's been a little over a month. I don't know how long it feels. I don't know if that feels like a lot of episodes or a few episodes, but I think we're getting the hang of it. I think we're working out, you know, we're ironing out some of the kinks. We got better capture cards. We got some pretty good setups here. Like, it's gone pretty well.
It took us 4 weeks to get capture cards that could accurately display video for a long period of time.
Yeah. But we finally did. So I don't know. I think it's episode 5. It's doing pretty well, I have to say.
Yeah, it's good. I'm glad we've gotten a lot of feedback. We've gotten a lot of emails. By the way, if you're listening to this and you have any suggestions for things that we should talk about, questions you would like advice on, please hit us up over at submissions@darkmodepodcast.com. You can also go to darkmodepodcast.com and you can find all the information, like where to email us, where to listen to the podcast if you don't want to tune in for the live streams, if you have like this weird aversion to live content. I don't know. It could exist. Who am I to say?
Yeah, you never know these days. But yeah, it's drkmodepodcast.com. If you have an idea for a topic, maybe you wrote a comment during the live stream and we unfortunately weren't able to discuss it, feel free to send it there. If you have any topics for us to discuss, send us an email. We're always looking for interesting things to discuss on here. And we've gotten a lot of really great topics so far.
Yeah, I've been super pleased. We've gotten a ton of really, really interesting things to talk about. We still have a few things left on our list. We've been trying to get through quite the backlog that has built up, but we definitely prioritize new, fresh content. So if you've got anything that you want us to talk about, definitely go ahead and check out darkmodepodcast.com. That's drkmodepodcast.com.
Yep.
I have been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. Join us Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8:45 p.m. Eastern, if you want to catch the Sunset pre-show. And again, drkmodepodcast.com to send us topics and to find us on your favorite podcast app as well.
And with that, we'll see you guys next week.
Have a good night.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warm season's greetings to you all.